Welcome to Planet Marzipan Podcast,
your fish and Marillion podcast,
where we talk about all things in the planet of Marillion and fish. I'm Meza, and here's my mate,
Craig Houston.
Hello, and welcome to Planet Marzipan. It's another one of our Chart in the Single mini pods, and we're here to talk about assassing. I'm Meza, and I'm here with my good friend,
Craig.
And we have guests again. We have guests. We have Tim Sidwell.
Hello there.
We have Graham Tenick.
Hello.
And Stephen Wicks.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Well, we're here to talk about the second single from Fugazi. I'll just start with a bit of a Wikipedia entry for this one, and then we can get into some discussion about it. So Assassing is a song by the British neo-progressive rock band Marillion. It was the second single from their studio album, Fugazi. The single reached number 22 in the UK singles charts in May 1984, and the 7-inch singles title track is a heavily edited version of the first track on Fugazi, with a length of 3 minutes 39 seconds, as opposed to the album version at 7 minutes 1 second. The B-side is a non-album track, Cinderella Search. And I believe that, Tim, this was your first ever Marillion single.
It was, yeah. And when we first chatted on the podcast, I told you the story of my mate whose dad worked for EMI and had racks of records in the garage, and he used to sort of give us free rein of them at the weekend. And I picked it on the strength of the cover. It was a 7-inch.
Yeah, yeah.
So, interestingly, my introduction to Marillion was that shorter version of Assassing. So I only knew it as the shorter version for quite a long time.
Wow. Yeah, because it just kicked.
And just skipping ahead to the B-side as well, because that was an edited version of Cinderella Search on the B-side of the 7-inch as well.
Yeah. Great place to start, though.
Yeah. I mean, great cover, fantastic song. I mean, those two songs are probably two of my favourite Fish era songs, full stop. And I don't know whether that's because it's my introduction to the band on vinyl or whether it's because they are just so good.
Yeah. And the 7-inch edit just comes in at the guitar riff, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
So the cover for this, though, is it, in my head, is it the kind of like a cross between the Seventh Seal meets Apocalypse Now?
Yeah,
or the Deer Hunter.
Yeah. Around that time with a card in the playing card when they sang live sometimes, and certainly not the Kings in 84, I'm sure that's why they had it. So.
But that's why it wasn't used in America, though, isn't it?
Oh, right.
They didn't use that cover in America because it was too close to Vietnam and the vets and stuff, and people were going to get upset by it, so they used a different cover.
Right, okay. Ooh. I can certainly understand why you picked it out of a box of singles, Tim.
Oh, yeah. It's a cracking cover, isn't it? And as an introduction to the band, to me, my journey with Marillion was that short single, and then when I discovered the album and heard Assassin introduced with that really atmospheric, you know, drumming and all that, all in the introduction, and then the middle section in there as well. I thought, what's going on here? This song is only 3 minutes long when I listen to it, and now it's got all this extra stuff in it. Amazing, what a band! They're great.
Was it Fish that came up with the idea of an Eastern sort of sound to it? Was that his sort of?
I believe so, yeah. There's a slightly longer version of Assassing on the 601 album, which has a sort of
boom, 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 boom. Yep, that.
It doesn't sound like that, but yes. What the hell was that?
Sound like Gaza.
That was Assassin, the reggae version.
The barbershop version of Assassin, which will be on the first Planet Marzipan album. Yeah, it's got an Arabic section in it, you know, that was taken out. And it's actually, I went back to listen to the version that they played at Reading in August 83 on the BBC, on the early stages box. I played that this afternoon. That's got that section in it as well. So it was originally planned to be a slightly longer song, around about 8 to 9 minutes long.
Yeah, I really like that gig.
Yeah, well, Fish had the bongos on stage with him, didn't he, during that tour?
Yeah. Well, at Reading, it was Andy Ward was there as the percussionist, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. And John Marta was playing on drums.
But the band didn't like Fish having the bongos on stage because he couldn't keep him in time with it. He was just making an absolute racket. So more often than not, the bongos sort of got secreted at the back of the stage in the hope that he wouldn't find them and bring them out.
But that extended version of Assassin was originally on 601. It's not on the streaming services version of 601 at the minute. All they've put on is just the normal album version. But that extended version is on the Fugazi Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So you can get it there.
Lyrically, it's Fisher. He's most wordy, shall I say. I mean, a lot of Fugazi is, but I say that in a good way. I think a certain parts of Fugazi album can be a bit too wordy. I think it spoils Jigsaw, some of the verse lyrics. But on this one, it works perfectly because he spits them out. They're complicated. It should come with a thesaurus or something, shouldn't it, really? But they all mean something. They've all got a thought behind them. It's not just him showing off, but he is showing off as well. I love the lyric for Assassin. It's one of my favourite. And for people, I can suppose people don't like that era for his wordiness, but when he got it right, like in this song, I think it's just tremendous wordplay. I don't know anyone writes lyrics like that, or whoever has done them, really.
Yeah.
I think it's in my top five songs by Fish from Marillion.
Is it?
Yeah, it's stunning. It's just so good.
And reputedly written about band arguments and people leaving the band, but.
Well, Fish had to do the hiring and firing, really, didn't he? So, and it was, I think he said it was particularly about Diz.
Yeah.
When he had to sort of say to Diz, you're not in the band anymore. You know, I am the assassin with tongue, fortune, eloquence. You know, he had to find the words to get rid of, well, who essentially was one of his best mates.
Yeah, because he'd moved to the area with him, hadn't he? Yeah, absolutely.
Is it a single? Do you think it was the best choice of the best single? Because I'm going to postulate that they should have released Jigsaw from a point of view of commerciality and a big chorus compared to Assassin. Maybe it's a good advert for the album, but as a radio, I think, well, I like them. You know, I'm going to sing along with that after I've finished listening to it. I'm not sure you'd get that. You would get that from the chorus of Jigsaw, maybe? I don't know.
I think it kind of reinforces what EMI saw the band as more than Jigsaw would at that point. I was much happier with it as a single than I was Punch and Judy.
Maybe Jigsaw would have been better than Punch and Judy.
I think, of course, to Jigsaw, so I know I'm talking about that, but you imagine a band like Heart with a big MTV video with big shoulders singing Stand Straight and all that.
That would be great.
You could listen to it once, and it's still a gross test, isn't it? You'd listen to it once and you just come along to it afterwards. But it depends what they were going for singles. Were they going for an advert for the album for their core fans to grow, or were they going for a bigger audience, or did they stumble upon the bigger audience by mistake with Kaylee? I don't know. I suspect it was the former. I suspect it was appeal to the fans that would like that sort of music that haven't heard of them yet, and give a more typical taster of what they like live, than perhaps getting on, you know, a big hit single.
Yeah. Any views on that?
Yeah, I think to me, when I sort of plucked the single out of that amazing sleeve and put it on the turntable and listened to it for the first time, because I was very much into Maiden and heavy metal at the time, it sort of resonated with me.
Yeah.
Assassin as a single.
As a package, so it matches the artwork, the angriness of the cover, the sort of the forcefulness of the song. And I think for me, I'm not even sure the record company knew what they were trying to sell, which is why it took so long and never really worked. Until Kaylee came along. I think perhaps it was sold to try and drag people in that weren't necessarily the old-fashioned prog fans, because it's not old-fashioned prog if you listen to it.
And they've got they got a lot of coverage, and they were championed a lot with Kerrang. So they were in with the metal artists at the time, even though they didn't really
Scottish heavy metal bands.
Yeah, exactly.
They signed the record contract with Kerrang T-shirts. I think they saw Kerrang a bit like they sometimes talk about prog magazine, not really prog, but we'll go in because that's the one place we can get to market. And I think at the time it was the one place they could get to market. And also there were a lot of heavy metal fans like Marillion. They played the same festivals. It was the same crowd. It was denim jackets. You'd see Iron Maiden, Saxon, and patches. It was the scene they were in at the time.
Yeah. But even Kerrang supported them really, really heavily right up until around about 2001, I would say. And when Kerrang changed a lot more to like skater rock, and they changed that, or they pivoted to who they covered.
You mean when they realised that we were old and weren't buying the magazine anymore?
Pretty much, yeah.
I think EMI were hoping to recreate what had happened with Maiden as well. So there was what Maiden had done with Derek Riggs. I think they were hoping they could do with Mark Wilkinson and Marillion, I think.
And that imagery, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And plus it sold a lot of T-shirts, that sleeve, as we said.
It did. Sleeveless T-shirts by the time you got it home, take the sleeves off. And, yeah.
What about the B-side, though?
I love Surge. Yeah. And then going back to what I originally was saying about the truncated version of Assassin, it was the same as Cinderella Search.
Yeah.
So that kind of fades out, doesn't it, on the 7-inch edit. And then when I finally got hold of this 12-inch, the single, and realised there was a whole extra section of Cinderella Search.
There's a whole minute and a bit extra.
Yeah. And it's a great minute and a bit as well, isn't it? Yeah. To end that song. It was like, oh my God, this band are absolutely incredible. They're still holding back some great stuff.
But how different are the two sides, though? If you listen to the type of music that's on side A and side B, I think it's really clever because somebody buys that, gets this rock song single, turns it over and gets something that is so completely different. Mm. So, and it's like you say, Meserick, it's the metal fans and the prog fans, and that single actually would make both people happy.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah. And it's a song that's not produced by Nick Talbot either. So
the B-side?
Yeah, the B-side, no. It's right. Produced by Simon Hanart and Marillion. So it wasn't... Right. So it must have been done as a different session. Done
the later. Leads into his place childhood in the same way that kind of Three Rocks leads into Fugazi. The theme of it, that it's more heartbreak than bitterness.
Yeah,
More romantic than acerbic. And it leads, coincidentally, it's probably the last thing you heard of new music before you heard Kaylee. And it just, again, I'm sure it's a coincidence, but it just follow that progression that they had with the first three albums very strongly.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, it is a Fish talking about somebody that he met at the Marquee that chased after. And, it was a Cinderella Search, something unobtainable that he was chasing after.
It's one of the strongest Fish era B-sides for me, this, it really is.
And it's the only one that H has tackled, isn't it, as well?
Yes, yeah.
Half of it.
I don't think it would have fitted on Fugazi, though. I've heard people say sometimes it should have gone instead of Emerald Eyes or She Chameleon. And I don't think the feeling and the atmosphere of the song at all fits in with the aggression and the forthright sort of feeling of Fugazi. It would sit oddly on that album, I think. It'd be like putting Lady Nina on Misplaced Childhood. It's a good song, but it's not in the... It doesn't have the same sort of feeling as it. I say it's a more gentle feel to it. It works brilliantly as a B-side. And it got known as a band in the 80s who did good B-sides, didn't they? It was one thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. And they didn't do Top of the Pops for this. They showed the video. No, they showed the video on Top of the Pops, but they didn't actually play on Top of the Pops.
They spent a hell of a lot of money on that video as well.
Yeah.
Enormous amount of money on that video.
Yeah, you can't tell though, can you?
No.
it's like a big kind of like a session of people trying to learn how to be assassins, you know, is it some kind of
PowerPoint and crashing cars. they told a story about that car crash because it had to go up a ramp or something, and they did it in a studio and there wasn't enough sort of space after the ramp for the car to sort of land and slow down and stop. So it basically went off the end of a ramp, splat, and into a wall.
And it was a hire car, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He has the keys, bud.
I think that they should have really taken heed for how that video turned out. That was a bit of foresight as to what would happen with Brave the movie. You throw lots of money at it. And it still looks like that.
But the thing is, they didn't play Top of the Pop, but they did play another music show at the time. They played Razzmatazz, which, if anybody remembers, was the ITV. Yeah, they played the ITV version, which is a kids' show. The video's on YouTube. Go and watch it. It is brilliant because the kids are jumping up and down and thoroughly enjoying it. Watch it. It's corking. It's completely different.
It was a bit Zizwazzy sort of edge, letting kids jump about a bit.
It was filmed in City Road, Newcastle, Tyne Tee Studios up here. But, I mean, they had everybody from Kate Bush and loads of other artists on Razzmatazz, but it was more of a... Like 5 o'clock in the evening rather than the 7 o'clock.
But it was like Razzmatazz and Tizwaz. Some of the guests they had on them, like for kids shows, you're thinking, sorry, what?
Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. But nowadays, like, sorry.
And then Cinderella Search is, I think it's one of Lucy's missions to try and get H to do the whole of that song.
Okay.
Mm.
Well, I hope she succeeds.
Oh, with the game. Beth.
No.
I can't see the emotional just about lyrics than the other songs of that era. Because it doesn't feel like a song from that era, does it? And obviously he's sung it once, but...
But again, it's one of those sorts, so you know, Fish wrote it about a Cinderella search, somebody he'd seen that he didn't see again, he was looking for. And that's one of the things that H says he doesn't sing Fish lyrics for, is because he's not in that same mental space as the person that wrote the lyrics, so it's really, really hard to do.
Yeah.
So while I'm sure that he could do a really good job, I'm not sure he would perhaps do it justice character-wise. He would have to get in the right space to do it, and that's not the easiest thing to do as a singer.
It's difficult because I think that you're talking about next Marillion Weekends, aren't you? And there's clearly a big anniversary next year of a big Fish album or a big band album. And they're going to do any Fish stuff that they've got to do. A big chunk of Misplaced Child. I know they left the script anniversary go without sort of marking it. I'd be very disappointed if they do the same with Misplaced Child. So,
how disappointed will you be?
I'll enjoy it.
What will you do?
Enjoy it.
Go on Facebook and malign people.
Yes, come on. There you go to the mask now.
I'm not that person. But I don't
if
see
you don't I'm play looking. It, you'll wear that mankini in the gig.
No one needs that. So, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. What I'm really hoping for is like a Misplaced Marbles night where they do, you know, the two of the best albums. They've got anniversary-ish sort of years coming up and they could do a night celebrating on both. So I think if they can do Fish stuff, much Fish stuff at the next weekends, I think that's more likely than one they've not done before. But
yeah. The other anniversary next year is Afraid of Sunlight's 20... Sorry, no, Afraid of Sunlight's 30th anniversary.
Yeah.
No, shush. But no way I'm that old.
Oh, come on. We've just done the 30th anniversary stuff for Brave. We're feeling decrepit as it is. This Fugazi stuff is 40-year-old this year that we're talking about now. So
that's mental.
Get thee to the retirement home.
Anyway, sorry to drag you back to the single, boys.
The video, one thing on the video for the single, we just briefly mentioned the video, on the Blu-ray. If you watch the video on the Blu-ray, you've got two audio options for the video when you're playing it. You've got the 2021 remix version, and you've got, I think, what might have been the 98 remaster, 99 remaster version. One's at 96, one's at 48. Now, that 2021 remix is the only way that you can listen to the single edit 2021 remix. It's not available in any other format. So there you go.
Hardcore. How do you memorise all of this stuff?
I think that deserves a round of applause. That's a fantastic piece of information there, mate.
Hey, he's could all wake up now.
You've absolutely I don't even know which one I played. Yourself there. What so, is wrong with you?
Do you have to choose, or does it just play one by default? Because I don't think I've actually chosen.
No, you've got to choose.
Have I?
Yeah, you've got to choose.
Wow.
It's just because I was going through it when I was doing the research.
I've completely forgotten we did that. Because Avril and who did all the remixing and stuff. She gave. I've got that here actually. So I've got a copy of it. Like,
it's Pirate Tim.
Well, I mentioned on the previous pod. About Punch and Judy, about the Oxford Road Show in 84, and I found the information now. They did do Punch and Judy and Assassin in February 84 on BBC Two Oxford Road Show, and Fish actually reposted it on Facebook in 2013, and he said it was filmed in Manchester, and he remembers Mark Kelly nearly missed the show because he was still listening to Fugazi mixes in London and had major keyboard hassles pre-show. So it's worth digging out on Facebook or YouTube if you get a chance.
So was that the first time they played the proper version of Assassin live? Because they played it live, a version of it live on the tour before, hadn't they?
Yeah.
So would that be the first time they played sort of the single version?
Well, the album version.
The album version, sorry.
Yeah. But well worth digging out.
And I saw when I was looking through on YouTube the other day when I'm doing some research for this, there is a version of Assassin of them playing in miming to it, on some, maybe some either Dutch or German TV show on an airfield, which it's not sure exactly where it is or what it is, but it's, you can tell it's a single edit and a miming, because Fish does his typical thing when he's miming on top of the pops and stuff like that. He has a habit of not having a microphone with him. He just sings and just goes along with it, because obviously it's all pre-recorded. So you can check that out on YouTube as well.
So which vinyl versions of this have you got then, Craig?
I've only got the 12-inch.
Okay.
So it was out on 7-inch, 12-inch and 12-inch picture disc. Yeah. I don't think there wasn't a 7-inch picture disc for this one, was there?
No,
I don't think
no. So. As Tim said, 7-inch has a edited version of Assassin 339, edited version of Cinderella Search. The 12-inch has the full album version of Assassin at 7 minutes and the full version of Cinderella Search. Apparently in Europe, there was a bonus track of the Assassin edited version on the 12-inch.
It was everywhere else apart from the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think in America and stuff like that as well, they had that.
And this is just for Graham, because Graham knows about York, but this, my picture disc, has still got my track record stickers on them.
Has it?
And it was £2.15, my Assassin picture disc. What about
so you? I was thinking back of going shopping in places like Track Records or going Sleeves in Falkirk or some of the places in Glasgow and what have you. And the money you used to pay for a single, you know, like 79p or 99p or £1.29 or whatever. And you think about it now, and I'm like, we didn't know how good we had it, really, did we?
No. You know, you pay like 8-10 quid for a 7-inch single now, don't you?
I know.
Bonkers.
And, or double that if it's Record Store Day.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast. Let's talk about that another time. Yes.
Yes.
Assassin, Genius or Bollocks?
Oh, we didn't genius. Do that. We didn't do that with Punch and Judy.
We didn't deal with Punch and Judy. Maybe we should have, but...
So everybody who's listened to Punch and Judy, it was genius. I'm being nice. It's good fun.
Was that a unanimous genius for Assassin?
Yes. Yeah, absolute. Yeah.
And Cinderella Search?
Genius. Oh, double genius.
Oh, double genius, yeah.
You can't have double genius, and he knows that, of all people.
I can break the rules.
You have okay, to be American.
They're both genius. They're both genius. How's that?
Yeah, no.
Me and Tim are pirates today, so Aaron, we can break the rules.
Okay.
But I'll definitely go with Steve. It's not an album. It would never have fitted on the album.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
okay. I'd never thought of that until he said it.
Yeah, and I think Steve's you're definitely right where it's heading in the misplaced childhood direction.
Yeah, so musically, yeah.
Spot on with that.
I've never thought of it in that way.
He's a clever guy.
Still might have been better than She Chameleon on album, though.
No. But it after the charts for this, it peaked at number 22 on its second week and it stayed in the charts for 5 weeks, so it had an extra week in the charts over what Punch and Judy did.
Okay. So this came after the album, didn't it? Punch and Judy was before the album, this was after.
Yeah, Punch and Judy was before, yeah.
This came out on the 30th of April, 84. So, yeah, very good. Okay. Anything else on Assassin before we go?
I'm trying to find it online now on the Oxford Roadshow video. There's a video of the Punch and Judy.
You can do that in your own time, fella. All right? Don't bore the pants off the people listening.
I think I've done that already.
Yeah, Craig, they've all switched off. Just goes to say thank you to our guests, Graham Tenick.
Cheers.
Tim Sidwell.
Cheers, lads.
Stephen McKillian.
Cheers, thanks. Been a pleasure.
Thanks, Stephen. And Craig.
It's been grand.
Okay. Thanks very much for listening, folks. Take care.
And stay alive.
Hey.
Thanks for listening to Planet Marzipan Podcast. Please like and subscribe from whichever platform you get your podcasts from. You can contact us at planetmarzipanpodcast@gmail.com and check out marillion.com, fishmusic.scot or fishmusic.eu for all the good stuff.